Hey everyone, Hoff here. Before we get started, we just want to send out a big thank you to our partner, Grind Coffee Co. for their support of the show. They're a convenient subscription service offering specialty grade, single source, 100% Arabica coffee available in whole bean and drip grind. Check out grindcoffeeco.com. Thanks again to Grind Coffee Co. for supporting the show.
Hey guys, this is Ray Ripple and you're listening to The Builder Session, so make sure you like and subscribe.
Welcome to The Builder Sessions, a podcast where we chat with your favorite builders.
We get to know them, their stories, and hopefully inspire you to get off the couch and build something cool. I'm Hoff.
And I'm Rosie, and on this episode, we have Ray Ripple. We talk about her passion for inspiring young people and reducing the dream gap, how failures in life are actually redirections, and how all you need is determination and faith in yourself to succeed.
All this and more in this episode of The Builder Sessions.
Ray, thank you for coming on The Builder Sessions. Welcome.
Hello, hello.
This is so exciting.
I know, it is exciting. I'm really excited to be here.
When Kristen was like, oh yeah, we can. Are you kidding me right now? Because we're big fans. We say this to all of our guests, but we're big fans of all of our guests, and we're big fans of yours too. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Of course. Well, I'm big fans of y'all too, so I guess likewise.
I still have trouble believing that.
Some big news broke just before we started recording.
These two Canadian idiots pretending to know what they're talking about on a podcast. Yeah, yeah.
Listen, that's my whole welding career is pretending like I know what I'm doing. Yeah.
Did we just become friends? Oh my gosh. It's just fake it till you make it. That's all it is, right?
Well, we got a woodworker so we can build bunk beds now in the garage, you know, all of the things.
Yeah, and tables and what is that stuff called? Epoxy tables. And
a little bit of everything.
The stuff everyone hates.
Lots of different mediums.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so Ray, for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with your work, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and introduce yourself to them?
Where do I start? I don't even know where to start. I guess my day job is I'm a sculptor, a metal sculptor, welder, artist, tack welder, whatever you want to call me. I build art, massive metal sculptures and huge chandeliers, as you can see behind me. Y'all can't see it, but they can see it. I'm also an author. I'm about to be a two-time author. My first book came out last year. My second one comes out this year. And the first one was a children's book about a little girl that wants to be a welder when she grows up.
Yeah.
I also, most people know me from cutting up my cars and rare cars and, you know, things that enthusiasts want to come burn my house down over. And then what else do I do? I don't know what else I do. I speak at school.
Yeah,
I do that. Okay, it's been a long day. If anybody's listening to this, it's literally 9 o'clock at night. I'm usually in bed by 8:30. I've been up working all day, so I gotta get this chandelier out by Friday. So y'all are just gonna have to bear with my tiredness. But
okay.
I speak at school. I love the kids, getting kids in the trade. You know, getting the girls in the trades, girl power. You know, all of 100%. The things. I do everything. I build motorcycles. I don't build motorcycles. I do everything.
I love it. How did it start? Like, where did you get this? Let's talk about let's say your welding fabrication. I've a little bit familiar with your little bit of your backstory, but where did you catch the bug for fabricating it, or using metal as like an outlet for your art? Like, where did that all start?
It all started by grand design of the universe. No, it was just planting seeds, just things I was just doing at the time, that I just wanted to get into or whatever. I was I have always kind of been in a weird job industry, you know, like I was a tow truck driver for a long time. I was a firefighter, you know, the welding stuff. I did concrete work, roofing, electricity, you name it, I've done it. And so I've always kind of had this like weird like thing for like just collecting skills, I guess you can say. And so I was already painting on canvas. Actually, we got to take it way back.
Let's
because
go.
It started literally when Chloe was like, she was like two or three. I bought a Care Bears cake pan from a garage sale. And I made her a cake that looked like a Care Bear toy that was sitting on the table. Now, the cake was not done on the inside, but it looked great outside.
Hey, that's all that matters.
Kind of like my welds.
So, kind of like my personality.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where it started. Like the sculpting stuff, like the niche for the sculpting kind of, I think, goes back to my cake days. Because after I made that cake, I actually made cakes for a long time, like on the side, like it's a side hustle.
Yeah.
And there's, to me, there's no money in it and the location that I'm at and all of those things I got out of it. And then I would just like keep doing things in life. And then I started painting on canvas, and then somebody brought me some old like barn tin and was like, can you paint on this? And I was like, sure. And then I developed, I saw tin sifts and rivets and baling wire. And then it kind of developed into this like cool 2D abstract pieces. And then I wanted to learn how to weld. And at the time in the industry, women weren't really welcome, especially in West Texas, because I'm in the oil and gas industry out here.
Yeah.
And so I literally would just like beg people to like teach me how to weld, you know. And at the time I was in college. She was in college at the time. And I was going to school to be a sign language interpreter. And
oh, then cool.
I dropped it. It's not for me.
No, that's okay.
I know
two signs and they're not, and they just share my feelings.
I'm terrible
about traffic.
At it though. Yeah. Now I'm like more like, you know, gang signs probably than anything, but I don't know. But anyways, so I dropped the class and I picked up welding and they slipped me a book and he was like, you know, the first semester is like this book work. And I was like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah,
and
out.
I dropped the class.
Seriously.
And then, but yeah, and then it just like my truck always broke down all the time. And, you know, so I went to a friend's shop and he was fabricating on a race truck. And at the time, nobody would teach me, but I was like obsessed with YouTube and watching YouTube videos. And so I basically was an expert. I just needed, you know, to deliver. And my truck was all screwed up and I'm trying to fix it. And I see him over there welding and I'm just like, yo, you know, let me try that. And he's like, you welded before? And I was like, all the time.
Yeah. That's the dumbest question I've ever been asked.
Yeah. I mean, like I just welded 5 seconds ago while you were paying attention to that. You just didn't even know it. Like I'm so fast. But anyway, long story short, but I basically started and just didn't ever want to let it go. And it just kind of turned into this. It turned into all of this. Honestly, like it led to all this, which is so crazy that this is my life. But and I just got a notification too. Like I just spoke at Arkansas Welding Expo. I spoke to like 2,000 kids.
Sweet.
And one of them was asking that same question. And like on that same day, 9 years ago, I was begging people on Facebook. I like posted like, you know, the Facebook post. It was like, anybody, please teach me how to weld. I don't have much money, but some money, just let me use your stuff. And it was that day, 9 years ago. So this was 9, 10 years ago that I like started really welding or doing anything. But professionally, I didn't launch my business, like business, legitimately business until 2020 and in 2020. So, I really, if you put it into like perspective, I really haven't been doing this as long as the guys that are OG in the industry that have been doing it for 30, 40 years, you know. So I'm still a newbie, I think, you know. And I'm sure y'all seen it. These kids are like insane with their talent. They're gonna freaking surpass me in like 5 years,
and the
you know.
The girls are insane.
Yeah, the amount of girls that are showing up to classes now is absolutely, I just, from the time that I started to now, it's just, and it's so incredible to watch. Cool. It's so incredible to watch. What a time to be alive, you know?
It's really wild. And
even in our classes, you know, we've been in it for, well, 8 years and six. And in the 8 years from when I started to now, the influx of girls in the class and that are excited and, you know, they have that drive and the passion and the what would the word be? The precision and it, patience and attention to detail.
Oh, everything.
It's just, for example, I had some girls working the other day on routing some door parts, making a door for their cabinet, and they didn't even come up and chat to me. They had changed the bits on stuff. They were running this stuff without even asking first time. And this one girl's like, well, is this kind of what you're looking for? I'm like, that's exactly what I'm looking for. You know, like, it's just awesome. Yeah.
It's because we pay attention, you know, like
you
we
pay shit.
Attention to the little details that like most dudes are like, no, I don't need no instructions.
Yeah.
No,
no, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Trust me. I have a class right now. It's an intro to trades class. I have 29 kids and I have, there's three girls in that class. And one is a welding apprentice. Another one wants to be an electrician, and the other one wants to get into some sort of engineering. But all the boys are always like, just send it. It's fine. Just send it. That's the term, right? Just send it. It's good. There's just something cool about being incompetent, I guess. I don't know. But then then the girls, they have this high attention to detail, and they actually give a shit about it, and they think it through, and they don't overthink it. It's not like a stress thing, but their brains just take that one step further before they, you know,
and they're calculated
on the gun or whatever. Right? Yeah, and they're calculated. And then the result, like 9 times out of 10, if the girl wants to be in the class, 9 times out of 10, they're a better welder or fabricator than any of the boys in there. And I'm not just saying that's to crazy. to typecast anybody, but it's just the truth.
You know what's funny is in like 10 years, welding is going to be considered a girl job.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's going to be crazy.
It.
Well, I mean, like not necessarily labeled as a girl job, but you know what I mean? Like we're going to have so many females in it. Because I was just watching this video. I think it was Lincoln Tech. I don't remember the college. I'll have to go look. But like they have a whole class of like 30 girls and they were just like going through each girl. And each girl was like putting her hood down as they went along this line. It was like so many of them. And then like, of course, the high school students that are coming into welding courses, like the all-girl welding classes and the all-girl welding competitions and like all of that kind of stuff is really starting to take shape and form. And like we're really starting to leave a footprint on this industry, which is absolutely incredible to watch. Like I cannot stress enough and like encourage women and girls and young girls to get into the trades because it makes a hell of a lot more money than fucking working as a waitress. So that's how I got into it was just, you know, I was working doubles at the restaurant all the time. All the time, just doubles. And I was still poor, I was still broke, still couldn't pay my bills. And I was just constantly working. And so like when I got into the trades and I got that first paycheck as a tow truck driver, I was like, hey, I still work just as much, but I got paid, you know, according. And so I really feel like it's just like what a time to be alive for women in the trades. It's really cool. It's incredible to see. And like the little girls that are coming up in it too. Cause like I, with the children's book, it's really like, also, I'm a talker, so if you hadn't noticed, but the little girls in elementary school, like all the littles, like, you know, they're seeing women do incredible things. And they're, you know, now saying, like, we have little girls right now that are in like third grade that are like, I want to be a welder when I grow up. And like, yeah. How incredible is that to hear that, like, we have those little women, you know, they're baking in the oven right yeah. now, you know, they're going to take over the world one day. It's so cool.
It's anyway, super cool. Yeah. I mean, that's where we live yeah. too, right? We just, that's, what made you take that first step though into that, well, you said it was a truck driver job, but into the
oh,
trades
my tow
in general.
Truck, your tow trucking job.
Yeah,
your just
tow
money?
Truck, yeah, yeah. Was it just money?
Yeah, it was
or were you like, I just, it, maybe I'll try this scene?
Nope. I was working at the restaurant and I was doubles after doubles after doubles after doubles. Like, and if anybody knows what a double is at the restaurant, it means you work all day. You're there from sun up to sundown, like yeah. well past sundown, because the restaurant, you know, serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So you're there all day long. And I live in a pretty small town, and so like my regular customers would come in, and one of them was a tow truck driver. And being a tow truck driver, you work 365 days a year, yeah. so it's not like you work 9 to 5 and then you get off at the end of the day and then you get to go home and relax. It doesn't work that way.
You're working like quadruples instead of doubles.
Yes, yes. It was working a lot more, but it also gave me more time in exchange. It was weird because like I could work a crash and then I wouldn't have anything for like 4 hours. And then I could work another crash and then I wouldn't have anything for like 6 hours. So it seems you're still working all the time. And some of these crashes you're on for, you know, 4 or 5 hours if it's like a big 18-wheeler and like you're cleaning up, you know, shit in the trailer and the tractor yeah. or whatever. Like there were, but also too, every single day it was something different. Nothing was ever the same. So when I got into it, I had no earthly idea what I was getting into. Like I just was like, oh, you make a ton of money. I need that money. How do I go apply?
Yes,
and so
please.
I just applied.
Yes.
But the guy that hired me at the first tow trucking job that I ever had, he hired me as a joke because I was a woman. And I'd never driven a tow truck before, never nothing. And I became like the best damn tow truck driver in West Texas.
Hell
for 5 years,
you did.
You know, so it wasn't even something that was in the plans. It just kind of fell into it by accident. But it was definitely my favorite job of all the jobs I've ever had. If it was a 9 to 5 job, I would do it again.
Yeah.
Just with the constant new, like, do you tend to thrive in an area where it's repetition or like you were saying where everything, you know, each day to day is different and there's a new task, a new challenge? Where do you thrive the best in that realm?
I get bored. Yeah. I get bored so fast, like not even on purpose. Like, it's just like, okay, I learned it. Let's move on to something else. You know what I mean? So that's why I love what I do right now. It's because every single, besides the x2 armadillo, I've built 2 armadillos, which I'm never going to build another armadillo. And if you're listening to this podcast and you're like, oh, I'm going to get her to make another armadillo, you're not. So that is the only thing I don't think I'll ever make again. But I don't know. I don't do that. I've never made a metal chandelier that's like 5 foot by 5 foot that's bigger than me. I've never done that kind of stuff before. And actually, every single sculpture that I start, it starts with usually a panic attack of like, how the fuck am I going to do this?
Yeah. And you know you're on the right track when the palpitations start.
Yeah. And then you just start.
Yeah.
And then it just happens. And so I thrive in very high stress, high, like demanding timelines. Everything's got to be different. Like shit that doesn't make sense. Like I think it's because my brain is like that because I'm dyslexic. And so like everything's scrambled eggs up there already, you know? And so like just putting it into it gives me, let me back up. This world of not knowing what the next day or the next sculpture is going to hold puts me in a world where I can sift and place my thoughts and like my visions into a place to make them come to life. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
I don't know
absolutely.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
So yeah, I thrive thrive in environments where it's wild and chaotic.
That's cool. I can relate to a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Like ADHD and that type of thing. And even
yeah,
that,
I got it all.
Yeah. I hear you. Even when we're like right before the show, we were talking before we hit record, and our main camera that we use just quits. And we're like, oh, okay, what are we doing? And we both handle it very differently.
I'm not very much technically inclined. So I was kind of going off the deep end.
Hoff's very like calculated.
Who is the anxious one? Who is the anxious one? And who is the calm one?
Depends on the situation.
Depends on the diagnosis and the situation.
And the day, maybe.
That's so funny.
If it's diagnosis, it's anxiety and ADHD over here. But that's what it is officially. It's so, and that's okay. I love my brain and I love how it works. And but so we're sitting here and I'm like, okay, this is nothing to me, because I've been in way worse, like in university, whatever it is, you know, if it's due tomorrow, then I'll do it tomorrow, right? Those types of situations. Mm-hmm. And I've been in way worse. And there's 10 minutes before, and Hoff's,
I'm losing my shit.
Hoff's in the corner, yeah, like in the fetal position. Yeah, he's just rocking back and forth. I'm like, dude, chill out. This is nothing. And then, because he's the planner, but that's why we complement each other quite well in this, because he's planned, and I'm very off the, you know, off the cuff kind of guy, and so this was an off the cuff situation, and it worked.
Yeah,
but that's why I can like relate when you're talking about scrambled eggs, because that's what's upstairs in my head too, and it's kind of really cool when you're getting all these inputs and stimuli coming in, and or probably ideas from a client even, or maybe you have a client or have had clients in the past that will send you messages and change this, change that. Instead of getting overwhelmed, you're like, cool, because it just gives you that hit of whatever it is, mm-hmm. dopamine.
It's like, oh shit, all right, yeah. Let's do it.
After the panic attack ends. Yeah.
Well, and you know, I'm not even gonna lie, like I think I talk about this a lot, like I'll be in the middle of a sculpture and I'll be like, why the hell did I decide to do this? And like, it makes me want to quit and go work at McDonald's. But you know, it's such a rush, but also too, like, even it's such a high stress environment that even when I finish with a sculpture, like, I don't want to look at it. Like, I can't look at it. I can't nothing for, like, a while. Like, it usually takes until somebody sends me a picture after it's been sitting, you know, in this spot, permanent home for a while. And they're like, oh, my God, this is great. I'm like, you know what? It really does look great. I'll send it. I'm like, damn, I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Once you know, trauma heals and passes, because it's just big traumatic event.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, imposter syndrome. Talk about that, because we talk about that a lot on the show. What's imposter syndrome to you, and how do you get through it? How do you grind through that?
Well, I think I carry a pretty severe case of imposter syndrome where, like, I can literally create something and then look at it and my brain will be like, you didn't create that. Like, there's something that'll just like think that I didn't do that. Like, somebody else did it. I don't know how to explain it, even though it was me, 100% me that made it from end to beginning to whatever. It's just like, I won't think that it's mine, or I'll think that like it's not good, or I don't deserve the recognition because you know, of whatever. Like, there's always these like thoughts that are constantly always just doubting. Like, it's lies you tell yourself. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think the more and more my work progresses, because every time I do something, it progresses always a little bit more and more. And it just seems like it gets worse, you know, with each one. But I'm in therapy like times two a week. But
love it.
If you're not in therapy, you should be in therapy. It really helps you sift through those things. But I do struggle with it a lot. But a lot of the times I have to take a step back and And I'm practicing more, like even with the chandelier when I finish it today, because I'm going to spray the patina on it, let it sit all day, and then I clear coat it, blah, 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 whatever. When I finished welding everything in today, like I just stood back and looked at it and I was like, but you have to like immediately shift your thoughts, because the first initial thought is like, I could have done better.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, you know what? Nah, fuck that. This is fucking cool.
Yeah.
you have to like really, your thoughts are energy, you know? And yeah. I try to tell people, I preach that actually, your thoughts are energy, and what you tell yourself and what you tell the universe always projects itself back to you. Even if it's negative, if you tell something negative or say something negative or whatever, it always comes back to you. And, imposter syndrome is a lot like that. It's just that negative energy that you're putting out there, and it returns itself back to you in self-doubt, but also in screw-ups. Because if you notice, you tell yourself you're not doing it enough, what happens? Things start screwing up.
Yep.
And then you have to give up. It's just because it's trying to, like, it's giving you what you're giving it. Yeah. And so
it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
Yeah. And so, like, trying to change those thoughts. Now, you're always going to have those self-doubt thoughts, and imposter syndrome is something that you'll always carry forever. And I think I don't think it ever goes away, but you can learn how to manage it, because you are in control of your own feelings and your own thoughts and your own emotions. And if you don't know how to control them, they're going to catch up to you. So you have to learn how to control them. Therapy, lots of therapy. But also, it's terrible to deal with, but we just manage, you know. Yeah. We just manage.
Love it.
You were talking about like when you're in high stress situations, job deadlines. Do you find maybe through that imposter syndrome and trying to manage that, do you find when you're in those high stress situations that you can just dial it down and it almost goes into slow mo? Like you're so involved in that and concentrated.
Yes, it's funny that you say that, because I was trying to explain that to somebody the other day, that like it doesn't kick in until after I'm done. Mm-hmm. Like it's never something that sits with me while I'm building it. It's always after I'm done building it and after it's been installed is whenever those initial, like the imposter syndrome kicks in. It's definitely like when I'm building, I'm in music, like, you know, I'm in my own world. I have the TV on, like, you know, my kids are constantly coming in and out of here. People are constantly coming in and out of here, you know, so there's no time. I don't have any time to think about it. But then whenever I'm done and you ride that high stress, like art is best created when you're either falling apart or falling in love. And most of the time I'm falling apart. So that's where a lot of my art comes from. So a lot of the art that I create is also stuff I've never done before. So you ride this like high stress environment for a really, really long time building this. Mm-hmm. So you don't have time to think about it. So when you're done and that high stress environment goes down, also so does everything, you know, initial let go of not thinking about it. And so because you're so busy with everything else, and so the imposter syndrome kicks in, and that's when you have to really catch it, like immediately after you're done, because if not, the imposter syndrome kicks in and then you start getting depressed, and then you're like, okay, you got to go into the next sculpture, and then you ride it all over again and you do the same thing, and then you forget about it, and it hits you again, and then eventually after like four times you start falling into a burnout. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't take care of it from the very beginning, when you fall into the burnout, then that's where like, am I depressed or am I burnt out? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they can both feel very similar. And so you have to like really be conscious and hold yourself accountable to not let your imposter syndrome take over your thoughts and also affect your work, because it's, you are great. And like, what you do create is great. And everything that you do is great. You know, this is great. Everything I do is great. And so, you just can't let yourself lie to yourself, you know?
Totally. It sounds like that'd be pretty what you go through. And I think a lot of people probably go through that. But it sounds pretty emotionally exhausting. So when you're done a build, do you just like collapse? Like when I've had like an emotionally hard day, like not even physically, but emotionally, mentally, are you just, when you're done that chandelier that's behind you, are you going to just like collapse and sleep for 4 days and then go to therapy for four more? I love therapy, by the way. We're pro therapy over here.
Yeah, I wish it was like that. I do give, before I used to just work right through it, and that's where I developed the burnout. And whenever you burn out so many times, that's where you get that confusion. Is it depression or is it a burnout? And then you start doing therapy and you realize it's more just a burnout. But also your body will tell you exactly what it needs. And so you should never apologize for being tired. Like, for being tired or for resting. And I used to feel guilty for like resting and for being tired. And it would be usually after like a crazy burnout, because you ride that high and then you hit that low, and then you ride that high and then you hit that low, and then you ride the high and then you hit the low. And on top of that too, like this is hard work. Like, this is not, and I think people get that confused sometimes. Like, welding is easy. Welding's easy. Choose your craft. Your craft is going to be, you know, what I guess would be hard or not hard. And like, building these sculptures are getting bigger and bigger. And I'm literally 5'2", 110 pounds. So it gets harder and harder on my body. And I'm 38 too. I'm not in my 20s anymore, you know? So I'm like, no, I wake up and I'm like, it's hurting. You know, I got to take some Advil to get through the day, you know? So like, you have to let your body rest in between these massive builds and these massive accomplishments, because that's what art is. It's whenever it's finished, it's an accomplishment. You accomplished something and you left something of physical value to the world. Like, that's going to be around forever, long after you're gone. And that is what is the most important to me, is leaving something permanent of value, of like a physical form.
Like a legacy, hey?
Yes, the legacy. And so now in between sculptures, because I can't do the burnout anymore, because it catches up to you, like even in your health too, like,
oh, yeah.
Like, it'll literally start deteriorating your health and your skin and your hair and, you know, your whole body. And so allow yourself to rest. That's the biggest key into every single thing that I do. Is now, if I go on a school tour, when I come home, I rest. I'm in bed for 2 days, but I'm resting, but I'm not really resting. I'm writing. I'm on my next book. Like, I'm doing things that are still working, but I'm still resting. But if I sleep, I'm sleeping. Like, let yourself sleep. Like, you know, your body has to heal to get to the next one, yeah. You know? And so, yeah, I do. I rest in between each one.
Do you find that just the trades in general kind of puts a, like, negative spin on rest? Because it's like, oh, you can rest when you're dead, or rest is for the weak, or... Like, is it, or do you find that you fight against that quite a bit? Or are you just like, I don't give a shit what anyone thinks. I'm just going to do what I need to do.
Well, now I don't give a shit what anybody thinks. Yeah. I just be doing whatever. I mean, I think everybody knows. I just be doing my own thing. I don't care what anybody says, you know, anymore. But I do think that the stigma of, you know, because the trades is a quote unquote man's world. And so if you want to be a woman in a man's world, you better hawk up to the, like, what it takes to be a man in this industry, basically. So if you're a woman going into it, just know you're about to be a man in this industry. Like, that's how this works. And I don't think that that part of a woman being in the trades will ever die. But I do think that the stigma of feeling like you have to be a man and carry yourself like a man and work like a man and, you know, all of these things like a man, that it's weak to be tired. It's weak to need rest. It's weak to need to take a break. And then it's not any of those things at all. It's literally your body. It's no different than stubbing a toe or getting sick or breaking an arm. Your body has to heal. Yeah. You know what I mean? And when you're working hard, your body needs rest to heal for the next time that you're working hard. And so I do believe that that stigma needs to go away for sure, because there's nothing wrong with rest. Now, there's a difference in being lazy and resting.
I was going to touch on that, but
that's very clear. There is a very big difference between being lazy and resting, but let your body rest. Who cares what anybody says? Especially like the dudes, because I feel bad for the guys in the industry, because they and, you know, men and mental health and like all of that kind of stuff. But even like the men's mental health too, like, we're women in the industry and stuff like that, but we have emotions. We communicate. We don't have any problems telling anybody how we feel. You know what I mean? Yeah. But like the men that are in the industry, you know, the mental health crisis that's going on with them too, like, to not have a safe space to show emotion or to communicate those emotions or to communicate being tired or any of those kinds of things, you know, because it's not the man thing to do You know, and that really takes a toll on even men's mental health and
100%
as far as their crash and burnout, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so like, even like, if you're a man listening to this, honey, rest. There ain't nobody that's gonna tell you that, you know, that's wrong. And if they are, you need new friends.
Yeah. Get a new job. Someone that supports you.
Get a new job. No, don't get a new job. I mean, unless they're terrible to you. I'm not trying to give you advice.
No.
I find it easier when you're older. I mean, when I was younger, right? You just work through whatever you want. You just grind it out. If there's, you know, a 14-hour day or whatever, you just keep going. But for me anyway, personally, the older I get, the more I listen to my body and I'm tired today, or I need to take a break. You know, you're getting sick or on the verge of getting sick. I'm going to sit on the couch or go to bed early. But the 22, 23-year-old me, no, I would have ignored that, and you just work through it. So I think if you can hopefully try and get that down so it's not into your late 30s, you know, if they can get talking about their feelings and aware of their what their body's doing earlier, I think that'll help too. And I think that comes around to the mental health piece of being able to have a safe place to talk to people and share your emotions and say, you know what, I'm not feeling that great today. Or I'm, you know, I've been battling this health problem that I've kind of put on the side and now it's too late. Like, sometimes I think people wait too long and, you know, they get these huge health problems or stress related stuff that they've carried for so long. And now it's almost too late, or it's taken the joy out of their world. So
yeah,
I don't, I don't know how we get around that crisis.
To rest more in your
20s. Yes.
That's how you get it. You gotta, like, when your body, I'm not even, me, when I was 20, 21 years old, I was working 3 full-time jobs, and like my entire diet was just cigarettes and Red Bull. I lived on cigarettes and Red Bull every day, because that's how I had to like function. I don't smoke anymore. This is 20-year-old me, you know. This is back when everybody still smoked and cigarettes were still great, you know, all of the things. But I rest in your 20s, because I think resting in your 20s helps your body continue to keep moving even in your late 30s. You know what I mean? I worked my ass off in my 20s. I'm still working my ass off, but I probably haven't gotten a full night's rest since I was born. It's just part of it. But if you're 20 and you're listening to this, and you know, you're working 15-hour days and 7 days a week or 6 days a week, and you think that that one day off is going to do it, like, it's going to catch up to you, because it does catch up to you. So listen to your body, rest. And also, you know, if you got to talk, talk to people. There are people out there that listen, so.
Big time. Yeah, that's huge. We're both big mental health supporters. I don't go to therapy as much as I should, but at least like quarterly right now it's gonna.
And even being open to talk to people about different things, you know, I think that it's a generational thing. You know, I think we're in that age range, maybe our parents. I know my dad, he kept everything and you wouldn't see a lick of anything
emotion out of him,
and then you grow up, and then that's the thing, you grow up around that, and that's what you kind of know and see.
Yeah, but your biggest role model, you know, in your whole life,
depending how you navigate life. I think probably my wife helped me be able to, you know, talk about my stuff, but or she at least share emotions. She's doing work on me.
Yeah,
but I think it's just extremely important. I don't know how you get to that point. For some people, it's almost a burden. to talk about stuff. And that's so unfortunate because lots of times it's way too late. Like I said, it's just, I don't know.
Or even like, even like what we, if one of us has a bad day, like Hoff, if he has a bad day, he'll call me and we'll just like chat. Cause we're basically doing the same job. So I understand. And he understands, like yesterday I was supposed to, we were supposed to put a show up, well, this morning, and I got home yesterday because we just did a big renovation in the school that I work at, and we just started this intro to the trades program, and it's been all on my shoulders, and then we're prepping kids for the skills competition and welding on Saturday, and I woke up this morning, and I was like, holy shit, I'm tired, or yesterday morning, and then I was like, I don't think I can edit the show tonight, and Hoff's just like, dude, put your feet up. And then that's what I did. And then I posted, hey guys, this is what's up. This is, it's, we were prioritizing that and our families over this show because that's what's the most important.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I just take this as do this. As your careers get more and more busy and your lives get more and more hectic, schedule the birthdays in. Yeah. Schedule all of these things in, because if not, you'll lose track of time, and then before you know it, you're missing out on things, you know. And so, yeah, it's cool to work and, you know, all of those things, but you have to take time. You have to take time off. It should be mandatory, like, that you get rest, you know. And so, yeah, I felt that.
Absolutely.
As I'm in here working and it's 9:48 at night.
Take a rest, she says.
Take a rest.
In the shop.
Listen, but I got a deadline.
I'm
like resting, but I'm working.
We'll rest after. Because we're all the same. I'm 38. How old are you?
37.
So we're all the same.
Oh, yeah, we're all 38. Yeah, we're all the same.
So we get, I get that. And I'm like, why does that hurt?
So everybody listen to us and our old selves.
Yeah, we know.
I went snowboarding today and my quads are on fire and I'm probably going to have to pop Advil tonight and tomorrow just to function tomorrow.
And you were just watching.
No. You know what? Getting old does have its problems and certain things, like you're saying, right?
Oh my God. On this chandelier, there's like 400 of these little dangle pieces. And then I should have cleaned them as I pulled them off the you know, CNC machine, but I did not. Instead, I was so excited and I just started hanging them on there. So I was like,
no.
All right. Well, now it's time to grind all 400 of something of these down. So I spent 2 days just with a grinder and a chair, just grinding each one of these down, cleaning them up and getting them all done. And after I was done, I was like, it doesn't feel like it's that much work, right? But you sit like this and you're doing this so long that the carpal tunnel really just starts to sit into the thumb, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And then your neck is like this. And so whenever I got done and I walked in the house, I felt like I was literally just like hunched over and could not move. And then I popped a couple of it. Like Advil came out with the Tylenol Advil combo.
Ooh, stack.
It's a game changer.
Not a sponsor, but they could be. Yeah.
Yes, it literally like changes everything. So I just popped two of those Advil, and then like about 30 minutes, I was starting to sit up straight. But they come out with all these cool contraptions that you can like stick your hands in now, and it rubs your hands and your neck and like all kinds of stuff. So
like, even when I'm walking around the shop with a welding helmet on for like a day, let's say I'm doing demos all day, and the end of the day, like it's like 2 days, my neck is killing me. And I just can't imagine like the older crowd, older than us, listening to this and being like, you guys have no idea. These young punks bitching about getting old at 38.
So take in 20-year-olds. Anybody listening to this podcast in your 20s, rest.
Yeah, rest up so you don't turn out like us.
Yeah, old as shit. Book, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, Ray, man. If we rewind back, did you take shop class? Did you take welding or automotives or any trades when you were in high school?
I didn't. So I didn't really have like the best life. Like I was a product of two parents that were addicted to drugs. And so like I ran away from home whenever I was young. And so I ended up in on the streets when I was 14. And so whenever I was in high school, like I was in high school just barely trying to graduate. Like, and I had a couple of teachers that made my life hell because I was, you know, that kid, not a bad kid, but just, you know, the outcasted kid that was forgotten about. And so like I never really had anybody that like kind of took me under their wing and was like, hey, let me show you something that can potentially give you the confidence to change your life. Because even welding and fabricating, it's hard work. Yeah, we're going to sit here and complain about it being hard work because we're old as shit. But at the end of the day, if somebody would have taught me this, you know, when I was 16 or 17, hey, Ray, let me show you something, I probably would have, it would have changed the whole directory of my life. Mm. You know what I mean? Because it gives you a certain kind of confidence. Yes, it's hard work, but welding and playing with the fire and all the things that are in the shop, it gives you a certain kind of confidence that carries through in other things, not just in welding and fabricating. So these students that are taking welding and fabricating in high school, they gain that confidence, and then now they feel like that they can take over the entire world. And yeah, so they go and do other things, even if it's not welding and fabricating. So to me, welding and fabricating would have probably given me the confidence to, at that time in high school of my life, to do something else. But nobody ever taught me any of that kind of stuff. Nobody, but also too, this was, I mean, we're all the same age. Yeah. I mean, do you remember back then they didn't really have those kinds of classes? I mean, they did, but it was always like the ag classes or like,
yeah,
the ag kids were in there, you know. It was never like a straight welding and fabricating like it is.
And it wasn't
now,
as serious. But it was like this just joke teacher who's having a smoke in the back and like,
yeah,
didn't like, give a shit what you did. With a stick just, welder, and it sticks to the table and it glows red and breaks the, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, like I didn't learn anything. Yeah, it's not what it is now. Yeah, no, but totally. I can tell you because of the childhood that I was given, I think that's why I love the students. That's why I love these kids so much, is because realistically there's so many of me in those classrooms. Yeah. There's so many of me in those, like, even in the elementary schools that I go visit. And like, I think I want to be able to show the me how, let me give you something to like give you confidence to, yeah, where you don't do any of the things that I did. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I love these kids. And like, if I can be in every single welding class in this country all over the world, I would be in every single class to show these kids like what you can do and what this world has to offer them. Yeah. Because we do have so many layers to the welding industry. We have motorcycle building. You can fab motorcycle frames, anything that has to do with motorcycles. It's all welding and fabrication, CNC work, machining work, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So if you got into welding and fabricating in high school, you could build motorcycles if you decided that you loved Harley Davidson's, not any of the other ones, only Harley Davidson's. And because I'm a, you know, I love Harley Davidson's, but as you can tell, so make sure it's a Harley Davidson, not an Indian. But you know that, and then like you can get into the art world. Like there's money to be made, and there's a place for every single person here.
Yeah,
you know, there's space for all of us here, and these kids deserve to know and to learn that as early as elementary school, that you really can be anything you want to be, and like it's a dream gap, right? And I could talk about this all day long.
Oh, yeah.
So like,
this is where we live, Ray, like, so we can chat all night. So, no, like, you have a deadline. Let's keep it on track here.
I know. So like there's a dream gap that happens, right, with kids. And it starts as early as like even kindergarten, you know, preschool, kindergarten, like where these kids, they're like, could you imagine like a little girl? We'll just put in a little girl and a little boy, you know, scenario. You got a little girl, she goes up to her kindergarten teacher and she says, hey, this is a drawing of me. I want to be a welder whenever I grow up. And she says, that's great, sweetie, go sit down. And then you have a little boy and he's like, Miss, this is my drawing of this dress that I want to learn how to make. You know what I mean? We have like a future fashion designer and a future artist here. Okay, so we have two different kinds of whatever. And then the teacher says, oh, that's great, sweet. Go sit back down. And they're in kindergarten, right? And then you get into third grade and those same kids, they present that to the teacher. And usually the teacher will tell them, sweetie, the little girl, you don't think you want to be a teacher or a nurse or, you know, something along those lines, a job that's more suited to being, you know, a little girl, right? Because that's hard work. You don't want to do that. Yeah. And then so she just starts immediately retracting her thoughts of like, maybe I shouldn't be a welder whenever I grow up. Maybe she's right because she's an authority figure, you know? And so these kids listen to them, you know what I mean? Like, words carry.
It's supposed to be a role model, a lot of energy. Yeah.
Right. You remember your thoughts, your words, everything. These are all energy that we project into the universe, on people and things like that, the same way with kids. And so the little boy does the same thing. He brings this thing to the teacher and he says, hey, this is what I want to do. I want to make clothes. And his teacher's like, don't you think you should have a job that's better suited because you're a boy? You know, you should be in construction and you should be a police officer or you should be a firefighter or whatever. And then, you know, it starts creating this gap, this gap in their dream of it's probably never going to happen. And as you get older and older, and then you get into middle school and you start getting into high school, eventually you forget your dreams even exist. And then what happens? COVID happens, and then we all find ourselves at home, and then we all find our dreams again, and then we all learn how to make money at it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it shouldn't have to be that way. We should be able to give these kids the space and the love and the encouragement to chase their dreams, whether it's to be a boy and a dressmaker or a girl and a welder or a motorcycle builder or an automotive, you know, mechanic or a concrete worker or a roofer or a drywaller or whatever. Like, these kids have dreams of actually being things that the gap that creates, that's being created by, you know, people that are older than them are telling them that, you know, their dreams aren't good, but that gap just starts getting bigger and bigger and they just forget. And it's just,
it's sad.
I want to close it. I'm trying to close it. I'm trying to show these kids that you can be whatever the fuck you want to be unapologetically.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't care what anybody thinks. Like, especially, like, you know, when I go to elementary schools, I love to dress really kooky, like really, really kooky and like weird. So that way the kids that used to dress weird in school know that it's cool to be weird. Like, because I used to get bullied for all of this stuff. And now I just make a living doing all of it, you know?
Exactly.
Like, I want them to see, like, you can be who you want to be and still be a, you know, a badass person and giving and loving and all of this and leave something of purpose behind for the world. And I didn't get a chance to do that until way later in life. And it wasn't because somebody said, let me show you something. It was because I decided to show myself something. Mm-hmm. And if I can teach kids how to show themselves something of purpose, to give them a craft that will carry them through for the rest of their life, then I will spend the rest of my days doing that. Like, that, I love the art. I love all of that. But the kids, man.
Yeah.
The kids, man.
It's insane when, like you said, we've both seen it in our classes, and we've talked about it on the show before, how powerful it is when a kid, like, understands that they can do this. And it literally does change the trajectory of their life because they're like, I never thought I could be a welder, or I never thought I could be an electric, whatever it is. And then they pursue that and they're thriving because they have a purpose. Mm. They have these skills. Like you said, their confidence goes up and you just get goosebumps thinking about it. It's so cool.
Well, here I can break it down in perfect example. I'm a perfect example of when you don't have direction versus when you have some sort of direction. Like, I was a product of my environment, you know, and a lot of these kids don't know anything other than the products of their environment, you know. And I said that there's a bunch of kids out there in these classrooms that are just like me, but they're never taught anything And they're not, they're never taught how to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And so they fall into being a product of their environment. That's basically how it works, right? Yeah. And so like how I did it, or this is why it's so important to me to show these kids that they don't have to be a product of their environment, and they can rewrite their own story, and they can rewrite their own future, and they have the power to control everything around them. They do, not anybody else, right? Yeah. So when I ran away from home at 14, both of my parents were drug addicts. You know, I became pregnant at 17, had my daughter at 18. So I was a teen mom immediately whenever I got out of high school. Now, I did graduate high school. I graduated a year early. But the second I got out of high school, what did I do? I became a product of my environment, and I didn't have any money, didn't have nothing. I was homeless with a child. I turned to the strip club. There wasn't a single person that told me that that was a bad idea.
Yeah.
Not a single person in my life said, hey, that is a bad idea. You should not do that. Let me show you something else that could change your life. Now, fast forward 10 years ago, okay? 10 years ago, what did I do? I taught myself how to weld. And because I taught myself how to weld, it planted all these seeds and it led to all these other things that I'm doing. And thank God that they didn't have iPhones whenever I was a stripper, you know, because if not, my whole career would have been ruined.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to show these kids that, like, you know, they think that the world has social media to offer them now. And within social media is all the women that have OnlyFans, and I'm not knocking any women that have OnlyFans. I'm not nothing. You can do whatever you want, but I'm going to show these girls that there's more to doing that. I'm going to show these girls that they can make, you know, a lot of money doing other things, welding, fabricating, building motorcycles, doing whatever, and be somebody.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that those women aren't. And I'm really not trying to hate whatsoever. This is not a hate on women with OnlyFans. It's just that I want to teach them different.
Yeah.
I want to teach these girls different because I know what it feels like to do what those women are doing. And had somebody told me that that was wrong. Nobody told me that was wrong. I mean, you could go back and read my story or hear my story and like the whole, how all of that transpired in my life. But I have this responsibility to 18-year-old me on that payphone calling my mom, asking her for help. And she told me no, to prostitute myself. And then I walked into that strip club. That is who I'm talking to every single time I talk to a kid about getting into the trades, or a kid that's lost and doesn't feel like there's going to be a way out, or a kid or a teenager or even a young adult in college that's like, man, I'm struggling. I'm by myself. This is just me, myself, and I, like, out here just struggling, like trying to make ends meet, trying to go to school, trying to whatever. Like, those are my people, and that's who I'm here. I'm here for them. I'm here to serve you. I'm here to show you that there's light at the end of the tunnel and that you can make something out of yourself. And you can take as long as you want, baby. Take as long as you want, because I was 30 years old before, you know, something really started shifting in my life. So you don't have to have it figured out at, you know, 15, 16, 17 years old, 18 years old, even 19, 20, 21, 22. Yeah. You are not supposed to have it figured out. And I think that at school and people put so much pressure on these kids that they have to have some sort of something figured out, and it pushes them in sometimes the wrong direction. It pushes them to these other things. It pushes them in all these different ways that sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not, and sometimes they don't know any better because they don't have any direction. Not me. Honey, I'm here. I'm here to tell you all how to get to the other side.
That's awesome.
And give them the confidence to succeed, right?
Yeah.
That's the big thing.
It's me I see in them. And if I can help change that directory and that path for them, even if it's for like a split second, they hang on to what I say, you know, because people do. They like, I know there's got to be something that, you know, everybody lives with that just one person said that one line and just stayed with you for the rest of your life. Like, you know, I feel that importance in these kids, and I want to make sure that I leave them with something of value.
Well, your example with the elementary students, you know, being told, oh, that shouldn't be a job you pick. I mean, you catch somebody on a off day, a teacher, you know, whatever. We're there as teachers to, you know, educate and inspire. And after you're talking like that, we have to be very careful in what we say, because, you know, you say something to somebody in grade three who has this dream of being an artistic fabricator and, you know, building motorbikes, and you're like, oh, that doesn't seem like you. All of a sudden, that one comment that you didn't think through before you said it could change the trajectory of their dream or passion. Mm-hmm. You know, like you're saying, even as a snowball.
Yeah.
You can say it even as an adult. Like,
yeah,
there was a woman that walked into my house one time, and she told me that I should stop painting. She was like, your paintings are not that good. You should stop painting. And I was like, And then I made my first sculpture, which wasn't even welded. It was all rivets and baling wire. It was a dress that I made a long, long time ago. And she's like, this is kind of mediocre. And I'm like, this bitch is in my house. It's insulting all my work. And now the metal stuff, when she said what she said about the dress, like, it didn't really bother me. For some reason, when she said what she said about my paintings, I quit painting.
Really?
Wow.
I didn't paint for years. I just focused on my metalwork, you know, and because I let one person tell me that my paintings weren't good. Now, I think my paintings are all right. I mean, I'm not, you know, Monet. I mean, I'm Monet on a totally different scale and a totally different medium, but I think, you know, you gotta be really bad at things before you can get good at things too.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, even if somebody's saying that something's bad, like, that people will hang on to that for forever and then just quit, you know? And like, these little kids too, like, you tell these little kids stuff, they just quit.
Well, they look up to you though, right? Mm-hmm. Like you said, words have power. Like, and you tell these little kids, you don't, you know, it's the classic, well, my guidance counselor said I wouldn't, you know, amount to anything. And people believe that because he's a guidance counselor. He gives guidance. And if he's guiding you to just give up, of course you're going to give up.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
You almost have to go on the other side to give to give them so much confidence that when somebody says something like that, or, you know, puts down your painting, you can have the confidence to be like, no, this is, you know, I mean, easier said than done. But if we can get to it, I mean, that's what I want for my kids, to be able to give them the confidence. If somebody, you know, tells them that they're not good at something, and it's easy to take to heart, but to be confident, be like, no, I'm still learning. Like, everybody starts somewhere. Everybody starts not knowing, and you have to practice and go through struggles. And
what is this opinion based on?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what are you, an art critic? Might not be
their own. Maybe they don't see that type of art, or they value that. Yeah. But it's not. First of all, they shouldn't say that anyways, because to each their own.
In your house, too, by the way. Like, you're like, hey, you can leave. It's fine. Just go home. It's
okay. I was so nice to her, too. Like, and she left her Yeti. She had, like, a little Yeti cup, and she, like, left it in my living room with her little sweet tea in there. And she was like, she left.
The little sweet tea in there.
Me, and she was like, can I come back and get my cup? And I'm like, yes.
in your head, you're like, I don't see no cup.
Oh, I threw it away. But you're
hitting it with oxyacetylene and just destroying it.
I know.
And then reality hits. Yes, you can come back.
Now, Ray,
you've
talked a lot about, shot out a lot of Harley bike building. Can tell you're a bike enthusiast. I've seen a bunch of your videos where you're crazy, like, is it stunt riding? What got you into the
that's cool,
I don't want to, what would you call it, like, you like to ride motorbike
stunt riding.
Got you into stunt riding and stuff like that? Because that seems like a really cool, passionate, like, side gig. That does that give you a sense of, to kind of clear your head when you're out there away from the shop?
I don't know. The only reason why I started standing on my Harley was because I crashed and I didn't want to ride again. I literally crashed my motorcycle on the main street here in town pretty harshly. It was pretty bad. Like, I didn't get terribly hurt or anything. I was in gym clothes, not in the correct PPE, so I learned a lot about road rash. But whenever I crashed, I remember picking it up and walking across the street and sitting on it, making sure I wasn't broken. And looking at my handlebars, and one of my handlebars, the right side, was, like, bent completely in. And I rode at home like that. I remember riding at home like that because I was not about to call a tow truck, you know, being a tow truck driver. And
I can you imagine? Hey guys.
Yeah. Oh, anytime I call the fire department or tow trucks, they're like, oh, what is Ray doing?
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So I rode at home. And then when I rode at home, like, I was terrified to get back on it because I just crashed. Like, I crashed pretty hard. And so one of my friends was like, you just need to get out and, like, ride it and, like, just do, like, a bunch of, like, just haul ass and then slam on the brakes and then do this and then slam on the brakes and, like, just really just learn your motorcycle. And so that's what I did. I went out and, like, just started doing a bunch of shit on my motorcycle in order to not be scared of it anymore. And, like, I actually had only been riding a motorcycle, like, a Harley for about probably 5 or 6 months before I started standing on it. So I hadn't been riding a bike for very long before I was already on top of it. And so, and now it's weird because I started doing it out of literally a spite of myself, you know, of riding. And it turned into a whole part of my career. Now I get paid to go stunt ride, which is pretty wild, like to go stand on my Harley and in places, which is nuts.
Yeah.
But
wow, go from like trying to avoid the cops to, hey, we're gonna pay you, can you do this?
That's awesome. Yeah, it's so weird how that works out. Like, yeah. I used to, well, we have an abandoned airport out here, and so I do a lot of like practicing at this airport, and then but we have a lot of long, straight roads, beautiful roads, and so I'll just be cruising. And just like, you know, I have to like stand it up, right?
Yeah.
Do you find it, is it calming for you? Are you kind of like hyper-focused? Can you kind of slow-mo everything? Is it similar to kind of your work when you get going? And like you're just doing it? Or can you kind of relax and breathe? And
well, it's all about I'm going to try to my best to put it into words, but like my brain is so busy. Like it's so busy up there. There's so much going on. There's so many thoughts. There's so like literally so much. Right. And then, so whenever I ride, it's not necessarily that it turns off all the way when I ride, but you have to really, 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 really be paying attention. Mm-hmm. To you, your feet, the motorcycle, what it's doing, the road, the bumps in the road, the wind, like all of these factors play a huge role in whether or not you're going to crash or not. Like if you stand not, you know, stand up. And so like standing on it, I just like The only time that everything really just goes quiet is whenever I let go and you stand all the way up and I put my arms out and then it's just me and God at that point, really.
Wow,
you know
that's
what I mean?
Rad.
Like,
yeah.
It's so, like, you can't think about anything. You can't be like, damn, what's for dinner? Or is Britney Spears on Jay Leno tonight?
Yeah,
or like
any
of those kinds of things. Like, it's not like you can't. You really, truly can't think about anything because the second you think is the second you lose your footing and you crash, you know what I mean? And so standing, but I'm doing like getting creative with it now, which is really cool. But like, it's not something a lot of people do. Indy and Larry died doing that, the stunt that I do. But he also didn't wear a helmet and I have crashed before doing it. But it's definitely not something anybody should try at home unless you're like trained professional type stuff. Now I was not trained professional. I literally crashed and just did it out of spite, but
yeah.
It's a wild, it really is a wild, exhilarating feeling. It's not even anything like you would feel like on a roller coaster or like type stuff, you know? Like you literally feel like you're going to die for like a second, you know?
You're up there doing the Titanic.
Yeah, literally. Oh, and man. Then you don't know at like 3:12 a.m. the iceberg strikes.
Yeah.
Do you do that after a stressful day? Like if you've got a, like, Do you have to be in the right headspace to go do that, or is it a stress relief?
Oh no, you definitely have to be in the right headspace. Like, it's not something that you can just like. For me, I know like there's a lot of badass women that ride motorcycles that are far more talented in the stunt riding world than I am by any means. And so for them, they go out and it's like a normal everyday thing for them. But like for me, everything that I do requires so much emotion. Like I put emotion in everything. I'm an artist through and through, for like sure, literally. Yeah. Yep. And so if I feel even for a second that even like something might be off, or off of the bike, or off in the wind even, like, or the road, or whatever, I won't do it. Just because, like, I'm not trying to have my kids bury me. And on top of that, too, like, I have artwork. I'm booked out on artwork for 2 years. And I'm not going to try to explain to my client, hey, like, I got into a motorcycle accident because I was being dumb. So I can't do this for you, you know, right now, or you have to wait, or whatever. Yeah. And so I'm always very, very smart and in particular and very prepared and very practiced before I do anything, just so that way I don't have a hiccup, you know?
So well rested, Ray.
Yeah, well rested.
Very well rested, Ray.
There we go.
Yes.
So I feel like as we kind of start winding down here, our fans, our listeners would probably not be happy if we didn't talk about Metal Shop Masters a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what was that like? Was your imposter syndrome on high alert?
Hella kicked in. Hell yeah, I was
while you were talking about imposter syndrome, I was like, I wonder what it was like on the show. But we don't have to talk about just imposter syndrome. Like, what was that whole experience like? How did you get picked up for that?
Well, it was kind of like, I don't know, honestly, they found me, I guess, through Instagram. And then so like, it was during the height of like COVID was just about to set in whenever they first messaged me on this. And I actually thought it was a scam. I didn't think it was real. And then like by like the seventh email, I was like, oh shit, this is real.
Yeah.
This is really Netflix. Like they're really calling me. So, and then COVID happened and then I didn't think that the show would happen. And then they called me, in like August and was like, hey, you're leaving in like a couple of weeks for the show. And so, but you're going to be gone for a month. So when I initially got picked, I did not even in any way, shape or form feel like my work was at in any way up to par to be on a television show, much less, creating art for a television show. Like I said, my imposter syndrome was probably honestly a lot worse before the show than what it is now, if that helps put things into perspective. So I did not feel like I was deserving to be there. I was just happy to be a part of one episode. That's literally, I thought I was going to make one episode. That was it. And go home. I made it on TV.
Yeah, life goes
on. That was
on.
It.
Yeah,
like, yeah. It was never, ever anything that I ever thought would be a serious life-changing, like, developmental thing that happened. And, like, everybody with the show was great. Filming was great. It was not, nobody was, you hear nightmares about cast, like, not cast, but, like, production and, like, how things work and, like, all that kind of stuff. None of that stuff happened. We all took really good care of each other. We all loved each other. There's a lot of things that it doesn't show that happened on the show that of us all just, we all became a huge family, you know. Cool. It was never, ever vindictive or mean or evil or anything. So, like, the things that we created on the show were truly, like, captivating works of art that I think none of us really thought we had in us, you know. Mm. I definitely know the stuff that I created on that show, like, had I not gone to the show, if you would have asked me to make those things at home, I would have told you I couldn't do it because I didn't know how to do it. You know what I mean? Versus going to the show and you're put in this high stress environment and all these cameras and all these people are watching you. It's almost like the same, like I said, it's not an ill thing towards anybody on the show whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Everybody was great. But the feeling of it, almost same feeling as if somebody was to point a gun to your head and say, make a year's worth of art in a month. yeah. or you die. Like
oh, that's shit, let's go. Yeah.
That's the intense feeling that it gave wow. the whole time I was there. And so when I got home, I crashed. I was in bed probably for 3 weeks. Like wow. I couldn't get out of bed. Like, cause you go from riding this high of like, you know, you're around all these people and all these cameras and you're creating all this crazy art and like, you don't have anywhere to put these emotions within the art. Cause I create art out of emotion and I didn't do it with music. I did it with nothing. I just did it in this high stress, like crazy environment. And so whenever I came home and then it just stopped, it was just silent.
Yeah.
Like it was just still, everything was, it just stopped. And so like, I struggled more with the aftermath of the show filming than realistically in the show. Like, but I got my ass up, you know, I got myself in gear and I got some things done, but it was really, I don't think people really understand too the toll like doing television takes on your body too and your mental health. Like, so that show, it took a lot out of me, but man, the fucking things I learned.
Yeah.
I cannot even like, it changed my whole life. Like, not even just the show and airing and people seeing my work and like what it's transpired, because it has really changed my career. I mean, very, very changed my career, like a lot. Definitely wouldn't be where I am now if I hadn't done the show. But like, just in general, like the confidence it gave me in my work and to believe in my work and that I do deserve to have this place that I'm in the welding industry, and that, you know, that I am creating amazing things and like stuff like that. It just really put a lot of things into perspective that I'd been struggling with for a really long time of never feeling great, and then leaving the show and feeling like, man, I really did something there, you know, I really left something of greatness there. And so, but everybody on the show is great. Like me and Ivan are best buds. Me and Tom are best friends. That's, you know, cool. Me and Stephanie are best friends. Like, everybody's so great. Yeah. Like, and Stephanie's, they're all awesome. Exactly what you think they would be. And like, Joe Coy is like the most humble human being you've ever met. And like, we all just fell in love with each other on the set. That's, it was cool. Great. I loved it.
Yeah, we had Stephanie on the show last year. And she was incredible for sure.
Yeah, she's such a powerful woman. Yeah. And I met her at FabTech in 2019, I believe. And I was actually really intimidated to talk to her because she's such a powerful woman. And then when we did the show, it's funny because I knew Tom too prior to the show because of the fabrication world. Mm-hmm. And so like when Tom walked out and like when Stephanie walked out, I was like, I know these guys.
That's cool. Yeah.
So it was really cool. Yeah, it was really, really cool.
Probably that being in a group or surrounded by like-minded individuals that you can feed off of, and everybody brings different skill sets and knowledge and abilities. Sounds like it's almost the perfect place to learn and grow as a, you know, as a human, but also in your own craft, and distill that confidence that you need too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because I live in West Texas. There ain't none of us out here that are doing art except for me. I'm the only one here doing what I'm doing, you know? And so like, and I'd been doing it by myself out here in West Texas. Now, I knew there were people online. There's people on social media. They were doing things like I was doing, but they're all over the country, you know? And so being in that room every single day for a month with these guys, like, there was a lot of things that I was so scared to show on social media about my processes and like how I do things, because like I always felt like they were very wrong, because I'm self-taught, 100% self-taught. And so the way that I weld, the way that I do things is very old school fabricator style type stuff. And so I saw these guys all doing the same shit I was doing. And I was like, okay, we're all in this together. That's we're literally, cool. I'm doing it all right. I was thought I was doing it wrong. You know, this the imposter syndrome. You know, I always thought that I was doing everything wrong for so long that I never felt like I was doing anything.
Yeah.
And then whenever I would see Lou do whatever, and I'm like, wait, I do that at home. Okay, that is cool. And then like I see Ivan do something and I'm like, oh, I do that at home. Okay, cool. And then I became less hyper fixated on like what everybody else thought was right or wrong on what I'm doing, because there is no right or wrong way to create art. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so,
and the lone wolf got some validation.
Yep, I learned that from these guys, just being in the same room with them after spending how many years in West Texas by myself, you know? So they taught me a lot. They taught me a lot.
That's so cool. That's
awesome. Well, as we wrap up here, Ray, we typically end the show with three questions. What's some advice you have for somebody that is interested in getting into the fabrication world?
Don't listen to a single person that ever tells you you shouldn't do it. And if you do it, you should full send. But also, if you're going to full send in it, know that you're going to fail also. But your failures are not failures. They're just simply redirections. So every time you fail, it always leads to something else. And if you just trust that that's going to lead to something else, and if you fail in that and that leads to something else, is it really a failure or is it a redirection? So full send.
Yes.
Full send in everything you do. Fail 1,000 times. Learn your craft. Be bad at it. And the world doesn't know you exist unless you show them you exist.
Love it. Nice. You could just wrap.
Now, what about some technical skill sets that are important to develop while you're getting into the fabrication industry?
There's no technical skill sets in this. You just learn, fail, learn it again, you know, because every single thing that I was doing wrong in here, I've turned into texture, I've turned into something else, or I've turned into, you know, beautiful pieces of art. So you learn how you want to learn. Well, learn it, and then do it your way.
Yeah.
Like that's the best way I can tell you, because I do have a lot of kids that are they're in classes and they're getting welding certifications and they're doing their welding certifications in order to do art, and which is exactly what you should do. And I'm going to tell you to do it. Go get your welding certifications, even if you're going to do art, because this year your girl is getting all her welding certifications. So if I can get my welding certifications, then you can get them. So don't ever be too good to learn how to do your craft, but also do it the way you want to do it, because it is your craft. It is your art. It is you. So the world doesn't know you exist unless you give it to them. So show the world you exist through your craft.
I think that's the coolest thing about like this whole metal artistic metalworking fabrication is that different mediums, there's texturing, you talk about texturing, like there, it's not just a one way to do things. You could develop your own way to do something. You know, there's a million ways to do something, and the artist is in charge of how they want to display their thoughts, feelings, emotions. And I'm really tied to the artistic side of metalworking, because it's a story that's being displayed in coming from somebody's head. So for example, in your mind, this chandelier that's in the background, it's just mesmerizing.
Yep.
You know, like it's so cool to see stuff being like the artistic side. It's not just structural welding and pipeline and doing root passes and all that other stuff that I don't know a whole bunch about. I'm kind of more into the artistic side and creating things. And it's really cool that it gives an outlet for people. And I bring artists into potential a new industry that might be able to step the game up, like yourself. Yeah. You know, you're bringing different people in that have different ideas and creative processes that just ups the game.
Yeah, so that's why it's like you don't really need any technical skills to do this. You just need determination and a little bit of faith in yourself. There's no science to this. This isn't rocket science, you know what I mean? You have to believe in yourself, and if you believe in yourself, you can fucking accomplish anything. anything. And I am living proof of that. You just have to believe in yourself, even when the whole world doesn't believe in you. As long as you believe in yourself, you can literally accomplish anything.
Yeah. Wicked. So last question. Top three starting out tools somebody needs to be a fabricator.
Oh, to start out, this is easy. You just need a grinder because you can have a flap disc and you can have a cutting wheel so you can cut stuff with. Now, your girl's scared of cutting wheels. I'm going to be 100% honest.
That's fun. Totally fine.
I don't like cutting wheels. So, but a grinder, number one, a hammer, number two, and a welder. You can even get you a little Cracker Box welder from Harbor Freight. Yeah. They work just fine. I'm sponsored by Lincoln, so I'm supposed to tell you Lincoln. So get a Lincoln. Make sure you get a Lincoln. But that's all you need to start. That's all I started with. I started with a little Cracker Box Lincoln, you know, welder, and a grinder and a hammer.
That's I love it. That's all you need.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
And a dream. And a dream.
Yeah, and a dream.
And some the determination.
The plasma cutter stuff.
We didn't even talk about that.
The plasma cutter stuff came too, like by accident. Like I got my plasma. Actually, my plasma was my first. I lied. Let's retract. Because my plasma was my first big tool. I didn't get the welder until like probably a couple of months after that. But with the plasma cutter, so what tools you need in your shop? You need a grinder, a hammer, and a welder. I started with a plasma cutter, a grinder, and a hammer. And the plasma cutter, that all everything that I'm doing with plasma cutting all came by accident because I was a tow truck driver and I'd bring home body parts of cars and I would just cut them up, you know? And
yeah,
because it was all scrap metal. And so I wasn't ever thinking it was going to turn into what it turned into, but I was just doing it because it was there and that was what I had access to. So when I say go back to the technical stuff, you ain't got to have no technical skills because I didn't have no technical skills whenever I started this plasma cutting stuff. It was literally just me and some scrap metal that planted a seed that turned into this. So think about that.
That's awesome. And that car, is that your car? That Chevy that you did?
No, it's actually a client's and we're basically like family now, yeah. But I do have one that I'm working on right now.
That's cool.
That is a 1972 Mach 1 Mustang. It's going to be cut up, of course. It runs and drives. It's got matching numbers, motor, and trans, so I'm trying to build the resume on it. But I am after Mattel. So your girl is working on trying to get a Hot Wheels car, but not only a Hot Wheels car, because it's going to get my foot in the door for a Barbie. And I want to be the one that helps the world develop the first trades Barbie.
Oh, that's wicked.
I don't know but they fucked up and answered two of my emails. And uh-oh. So, you know.
Your foot's in the door.
They're stuck with me. We're live now.
Yeah, let's go.
So it hasn't happened yet. This is me projecting that into universe because I'm holding myself accountable because I am going to make it happen. But also if it doesn't happen, I need somebody in 15 years, 20 years to listen to this podcast and be like, hey, we need to make this happen. So
that's cool.
My goal is with the Mustang is to I'm after you, Mattel. I'm after you. I'm going to get that Hot Wheels car. I'm going to get that Barbie. And then we're going to have trades Barbies. And then little girls are going to be able to walk on the Barbie aisle and not just pick a Barbie in a dress, but one with a welding helmet.
Yeah. Oh, that's rad. I got goosebumps inspiring. When you talked about
that's inspiring right there.
It hasn't, like I said, it's not, it no, has not still, happened yet.
No, but you got to talk about it. Put it out there.
It is. It will happen.
Having two daughters myself, Hoff has a daughter. Like, that's, I love it. And I just, while we were talking, I just bought a copy of your book on Amazon. So
You should have just, I could just send you one.
No, but we're going to support. Yeah.
I make like a whole half a cent.
Hey.
I don't make no money off this book. It literally is like, it was never created to like make money.
It was literally.
Passion project.
The whole book is. My son and I did it.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole book is written and illustrated by me and my son. And so like, he just didn't want to be on the book. He was like, do not put my name on the book.
Yeah.
You know, a teenager thing. And so now he's like, oh, it's me. Well, you
know, yeah, now he's got some cred. Yeah.
But yeah, you shouldn't have told me I wanted to sing.
No. Copies. It's all good. And then we'll read it to my daughters and it'll be great.
Well, I'll still send you some because you can color in it too.
Oh,
so
sweet.
I made it to where like they can create their own story within the story.
Oh,
too.
That's cool.
You know, the artist in me.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And we'll link to it when I grow up. We'll link to it in the show notes of this episode.
Yeah.
Ray, I just want to say this has been probably one of the most the coolest episodes we've done. I don't know. It's been, I say that every time, but every time it just gets better and better and better and better.
Yeah.
Right when I think it can't get any better than we have a guest like you and just your passion for the kids and your passion for the craft. And I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been really cool. And maybe we can get you in the class like virtually or something one day.
I'll FaceTime you tomorrow. You let me know. I will talk to any of the kids. Cool. We can set up a Zoom meeting or maybe like we can figure out a way to like come out, you know, to you. Kristen's really good with the school visit stuff. So if that's something that you're really interested in, you know, she's really good about making those things happen. So we can make it happen.
Okay. We'll talk. That's sweet. Okay.
For sure.
Thanks again for coming on. This has been such an amazing episode and we want to have you on again. The door is open.
You let me know when.
Whenever
you
want
to
come on.
I got some big stuff coming up. You know, I'm leaving to go to Palm Springs next week for my movie premiere.
What? Awesome.
No, yeah, I have love it. Yeah, so anytime you're ready, let me know.
Yeah. Okay. And anytime you want to come on and promote stuff and just share whatever, the door is open. Just send us a message and we'll be there for sure.
Well, I'm following you on the gram now. So.
Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, whenever she sent me y'all's stuff this afternoon, I was like, oh, I know those guys. And then so I was like, I follow you because I'm going to talk to you anyways. Yeah. And I like to know the people I'm following.
So
I know everybody's like, please follow me, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, I got to meet you. I want to talk to you.
Course,
I want to hang out with you. You know what I mean? I need to see a face, the name. Otherwise, you know, I forget names so bad. But I got to have a face to the name. So I'm really glad that I got to meet you guys.
As we close up here, where can people find you? And if you have anything specific that you want to promote, now you can do that.
You can just find my name, just Ray Ripple. You can find me anywhere, Ray Ripple on everything.
All right, we'll post. We'll find the links and we'll put them in the.
I think I'm the only Ray Ripple in the world. I'm not sure.
Probably.
I feel like I am because it's not hard to find me. You want to find me? It's not hard to find me.
Yeah. Okay. We'll post everything. So thanks again. And
of course.
Thanks for everyone for listening. Thanks, Hoff.
Thanks, Rosie.
And we'll catch everyone in the next one.